Coming up on Windows Weekly, Leo and Mary Jo are off, but thankfully, Paul Thurrott's here, and we're going to discuss a preview of Windows 8 release preview, Microsoft removing features, and how we owe our whole careers to the fine folks at Redmond. All that and more coming up on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 261, recorded May 17th, 2012. Don't nudge me. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToAssist by Citrix. Working in IT can be complicated. That's why we recommend GoToAssist by Citrix. With GoToAssist, you can take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all of your users from anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com, click the Try It Free button, and use promo code Windows. And by Ford, giving customers the power of choice with a full line of electric and hybrid electric vehicles. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. This is the show where we take Microsoft, we put them down on the therapist's couch, and we ask questions like, did somebody steal your lunch money? Did somebody touch your patents inappropriately? Was it HTC? Leo Laporte's out. I'm Ayaz Akhtar. Thankfully, we have a good licensed therapist in Paul Thurrott of Win Super Site. And usually Leo runs down all the accolades about Paul. He's an author. I think he saved some cats from a burning building. He can stand up at certain times. Sometimes he sits down. And then he knows everything there is to know about Microsoft anyway. So how's it going, Paul?
It's going pretty well. How are you?
See, that wasn't half-hearted. I tried to give some accolades this time. See, I watched this show.
I don't really require the accolades.
You don't require them, but are they unappreciated?
I don't really care.
He's indifferent to accolades. So, again, I'm sure, is that true in your comment section at Win Super Site? Do you like accolades?
Are they full of accolades?
Are they? I'm asking you.
I would not describe them as full of accolades, no.
You're telling me that internet commenters do not heap praise upon your writings at winsupersite.com.
I think they do sometimes, but as you may have noticed online, a lot of the people who tend to leave comments tend to be among the more disgruntled types.
Yes. We need to gruntle the people. It's very important to gruntle them or gumble them. We have Alex running the board back there. He's excited in the dark. There he is. You can see the top of his head. He'll be filling in for... Actually, who's going to be... It's always Leo does the show.
It's always Leo.
And Leo, by the way, is on special assignment. So special, in fact, that he did not tell me where he's going. He refused to tell me where he was going. He usually does that. Also, Mary Jo Foley's not here because, well, she didn't want to talk to me either. So Paul, for some reason... We did not tell Paul I was hosting the show. So,
I know. And Mary Jo is on vacation. I believe this is the first... vacation she's actually taken in many, many years. So,
do we know where she ended up? Did she go to Redmond?
No, she went to Japan.
Close. So close. Not at all. Anyway, like I said, though, we do talk about Microsoft stuff here because that's what we do. And we should actually talk about something. I don't know if this is confirmed yet, but apparently if you buy a PC after June 2nd, for $15, you can get an upgrade to Windows 8 Pro. Now, I've heard this. I know you've reported this, Paul. I know I've seen other people.
I'm the source of this, actually.
People have been reporting your report, but you can confirm this?
This is what I was told.
This is what you were told. So Microsoft, though, hasn't said anything official to their press channel.
No, actually, the way I should phrase this is that Mary Jo had gotten a leaked copy of the, I guess it's a web ad or whatever that Microsoft's going to use to promote this on June 2nd. And the dollar amount was X'd out. So, the first thing that we knew generally was that there would be a cost associated with it. And that it was for the Windows 8 Pro version, right? The high-end version, not the equivalent version, which is basically how it's been done in the past. So, if you had bought, Windows Vista Home Premium, you could have upgraded to Windows 7 Home Premium, right? For free or for shipping and handling, really. So, this time around, it's just one version, Windows 8 Pro. It's going to be $15. That's what my sources have told me. I've heard that now from two different people. And I don't know when they're going to announce it officially, but that date is coming up. It's about 2 weeks away, so presumably sometime soon.
So do you think this is obviously a move to get people to buy computers now, not to be frozen to wait for Windows 8?
Yeah, I mean, every time a new Windows version comes out, Microsoft is in this weird position where they're touting the next version of Windows, but their partners are all selling the current version of Windows. So through new PC purchases. So what they're trying to do this time around, as in the past, is get people to get people to not stop buying to...
I tried this phrase the other day.
It sounds strange.
I know.
I stop buying computers.
I think I called it the stop the cessation of sales. Because I'm like, yes, I guess that exactly. works. It was just really weird to say. They're trying to keep sales going, I think, is the active way to say it. But, yeah.
Right. In other words, if you need a PC today and you're concerned about Windows 8, there's no reason to wait, I think, is the message here. I'm not sure that's strictly true. But I also don't think that with this version of Windows, there is as much of a demand early on for people with existing PCs, right? Mm-hmm. So when we had Vista in the market and Windows 7 was coming, I could see the final 6 months of that being a problem for Microsoft and its partners because everyone was looking forward to Windows 7. I think the people who are looking forward to Windows 8 the most are going to want to use it on new machines that aren't necessarily the typical desktops and laptops and so forth that we have today, because I think it's a better experience on tablets and on those hybrid devices that we'll see in the future. So, you know, we'll see how that goes, but I don't think there's as much of a demand.
Didn't hardware partners actually put a little sticker saying Windows Vista ready with Windows XP when that was coming out?
That does sound right.
Is that happening again now? I mean, I know that the idea obviously is because all those Ivy Bridge machines are coming out now. Intel wants them to be sold, and there's no new OS on there. Are we going to see stickers to say Windows 8 ready?
I've not heard anything about that. I don't think so. Windows 7 obviously had lower hardware requirements than did Windows Vista, or roughly similar. Windows 8 ditto, lower or roughly similar. So frankly, any computer built over the past 5 years or so should be able to run Windows 8 no problem, other than the fact that some of the interesting new stuff requires new hardware, not just the touch stuff, but also all of the sensors, right? The accelerometer type stuff, the proximity sensor stuff, the compass, and all those other things that we sort of associate with smartphones and the iPad too. We're going to see that in new hardware. So depending on your needs, you may be better off with a new machine anyway.
What do you think of the $15 price point? I mean, that seems like an attractive number. It's not like if you saw $19.99 or $14.99.
Yeah.
$15 doesn't sound so bad for the next generation operating system, especially since a lot of people are like, well, I don't know if I want to upgrade to Windows 8 at all. Windows 7 is really good. Why? I mean, $15, though, not a lot of money.
Yeah, I've heard some complaints from some people who have said, well, hold on a second, wasn't this free last time? Or, didn't I get the equivalent version for free? And there are some differences between this program and the programs of the past. And I can't really divulge all of those differences, but I guess I would just say vaguely that in the past, you would go through the PC maker and they would typically charge you for shipping and handling. So this $15 fee is not actually far off or at all off from what you would have paid, HP or Dell or whatever in the past. It's also a little bit unique in that it's the high-end version of Windows 8. So you could buy a typical consumer PC today, get Windows 7 Home Premium on it, which is kind of like a mid-level version, and for $15, then get the high-end version of Windows 8 in the future. I actually think this is a good deal, and is an insignificant amount of money, and that even for people who maybe aren't sure they're going to want to run Windows 8, because they just don't have the experience yet, I think they should really give this some serious thought.
Now, I've read conflicting reports on this. Maybe it's more commenters or not. But if you upgrade to Windows 8, will you lose the ability to watch DVDs and lose Media Center if you upgrade?
This is convoluted enough that I'm afraid to say what I think it is off the top of my head. Somebody pointed to me to a fact that Microsoft had produced after the fact that noted that if you upgraded, you would probably lose the DVD playback capability if you did an in-place upgrade.
So pay $15 and I lose a feature. That's one. Do I lose Media Center too? Because Windows 7 comes with it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So in other words, Windows 8 doesn't come with Media Center. Even Windows 8 Pro doesn't come with Media Center. There's a new facility in Windows 8 that I think is just called Add Features to Windows that is a replacement for Windows Anytime Upgrade, right? which used to be used to move you up the SKU list. So if you started with Home Basic, you could upgrade to Home Premium or to Professional or to Ultimate. In this version, they have upgrade packs. One of them is an upgrade to a new version. So you can upgrade from Windows 8 to Windows 8 Pro. And then they have an upgrade for Media Center that is part for people with Windows 8 Pro. And that provides DVD playback, but only through Media Center, right? Not through Media Player.
Nice.
Okay, so we have a graphic up for the audio listeners. We have a graphic of all kinds of upgrade paths that you could do from Windows.
It's a little less complex now. It's not quite the MC Escher painting we're looking at here.
Yeah, what it should just be is a giant block that says Windows. Just that's it, and this is arrow.
Yeah.
Buy a new PC.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Can we expand on that? I don't know if we could expand on that. It seems like it's expanded enough, and it's. I got razzed the other day from a TNT viewer saying, a Tech News Today viewer saying, why do you keep saying what Microsoft does is confusing? Now, Paul,
really?
You're an expert.
Let me tell you something. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, Microsoft. Thank you for being so utterly ridiculous and complicated, because you have given me a career out of explaining in plain English the stupid and complicated things that you do. And it has never gotten better, ever. It's gotten different. There are new kinds of complexities. And even when they introduce like a simpler SKU update plan for Windows 8, they still manage to screw it up with these update packs and add features to Windows and everything. They're beautiful, and I thank them for that. Because this software is used by so many people, and nobody understands what they're saying. And so it's a beautiful, dysfunctional relationship. It's perfect.
It's that they try to make everybody so happy all the time. It's like, okay, look, we have IT professionals, and we want the future consumers to love us. We want to make sure everything still works together. Since they're trying to do all of this compromise everyone happy, we get this fun thing of like, okay, their press releases are – not press releases. Their blog posts are 8,000 words.
You literally have to parse them. You know, there should be a word macro where you could paste it in and it would distill it down to the actual 33 words that meant something, you know?
Isn't that actually, it's auto-summarized, isn't it? That used to be in Word.
Yeah, well, but I believe that the blog posts are written in such a way as to thwart that functionality that, you know, I have, and Mary Jo has too, I think, you know, developed an ability now to kind of read these things and pick out, you know, it's funny because you forget sometimes that they're doing this. And so you start reading and you fall asleep. Or you get distracted by something and you forget about it. But if you actually go through these posts and read it, you know, somewhere buried in there, there'll be a very concise statement about something that has nothing to do with the blog post topic at all, you know, seemingly, but is in fact the way that they communicate. We know people like this, people who don't speak directly, right? You know, I won't get into a long story about this, but my brother was going to move back to be near me. And we went out one night and he was talking about how his fiance was not thrilled with my parents, which is completely understandable. And that was the end of the conversation. So the next morning I was talking to my wife and she said, oh, did your brother tell you he wasn't moving back? And I said, no. And then I said, wait, yes, he did. That was how he told me. You know, he told me in a very roundabout way, you know, and so I know him well enough to know that that's what he's doing. Although in this case, it took me the next morning to figure it out. And, you know, Microsoft's blog post the same way. There are simple ways to communicate things, you know. And then they do this crazy thing, you know, just to use this DVD playback example in Media Center, where understandably there's a crazy amount of awful feedback and questions and you know, they didn't address all of the stuff. And so a day later they produce a FAQ, which is another enormous document with all these awful things about codecs and licensing and all this crazy stuff, you know. And, you know, I've used this example in the past, but I think about the way, you know, Apple would handle something like this. And I compare it to the way that Microsoft handles it. And it's just sad, you know, it's sad that they can't do the right thing for customers and just suck it up and do it. And then all they would have to do is come out and say nothing, because it would just be in there. There would be no reason to write a 8,000 word blog post describing and rationalizing why they're taking away a feature. You know, it's crazy.
I'm just thinking the Apple method of communication is not saying anything for the longest time, yes. Not denying it, not giving an FAQ, not saying anything until, okay, okay, the Times wrote it up. The Journal wrote it up. Okay, now we have to do something. We'll actually make, you know, we'll put up a little page that says you can, I don't know, we get a free bumper or whatever it's going to be. But Microsoft is so
free. Well, that was a big issue. I mean, this is honestly, I mean, the funny thing about, DVD licensing is the truth is going forward, probably fewer and fewer people will even need this functionality every year. No doubt about it. Microsoft, by the sheer volume of what it does, must get DVD playback functionality on a per copy basis for pennies. And so for them to take something like that out of Windows and explain that it was the complexity of the cost and licensing for DVD playback is just awful. It's just so customer unfriendly, you know. They should suck up the cost of that. That's what you should do. You're providing this functionality for customers. You know, they're not taking out like DOS. This is like DVD playback. What's the big deal? You know, it was in there. Now it's not. I just think it's strange.
Just trying to think about the DVD playback system with Microsoft. I think it's partially because they expect third-party vendors to put on their own bloatware, crapware, or even just extras, if you want to call them that. Because I know one of my PCs came with Cybermedia Power DVD or something like that, which I really absolutely abhor because it keeps coming up. When I have Media Center up and close it out, for some reason, Power DVD wants to show up. Not sure why. Just shows up. Cannot remove the thing, no matter how hard I try, because it does Blu-ray support, and I like that. You think that's why they're going with this? Like, you know what? We can save, like, cent per copy.
Yeah, that's not why, but that's how they'll rationalize it. You know, and it's fair to say that when you buy a new computer that has a DVD drive or a Blu-ray burner or whatever, that there'll be some software on there like that stuff you were talking about. That's fair, you know. It doesn't really help the people who are upgrading or the people who are clean installing Windows on a new PC or an old PC or whatever. I mean, to me, that basic functionality should be in the box, you know, just like basic antivirus functionality, basic web browsing functionality, basic whatever, you know, should be in the box. There's no reason that PC makers and third parties can't expand on those capabilities by adding additional things. You know, for DVD playback, you could have various media suites and the ability to do, you know, make movie DVDs and whatever and all that stuff. But, you know, DVD playback is such a basic thing. And you could make an argument, why doesn't it have Blu-ray playback built in? Why isn't that just there? I don't know. I guess because it's expensive.
I mean, they could have quietly said nothing. I mean, like, okay, look, Windows 8, you get on an Ultrabook. You're not going to be like, why can't I play DVDs on this?
Well, except that
you don't have an
in that case. Well, they should have left it in and said nothing. If they take it out, they kind of have to say something. But, you know, passing along the cost to consumers is like, it kind of reeks of chintziness to me.
Well, that Windows is not cheap. It's not like it's like, you know, this $20 product you get off the shelf. It's you know, it's very expensive to get a license for a regular manufacturer. If you wanted to buy it outright, well, it's a couple $100.
It's more than that, right? It's also just the sheer complexity of this. In other words, you have communicated, Microsoft, that very few people use Media Center. However, you've also communicated that you are going to provide Media Center in this version of Windows. You later communicate that you're going to provide it separately as kind of an add-on pack instead of just putting it in the product. Now, why would you go through all those extra steps? I mean, if you're going to do it and you're just going to put the version from Windows 7, why not just put the damn thing in there? I mean, I suppose they don't want anyone to use it because their plan is not really to upgrade it. But there are plenty of technologies that are in Windows 8 or Windows 7 that were kind of legacy bits from the past that just sort of exist because they were there before. You know, Mobile Device Center is an example of that. I think the XPS reader stuff is going in that direction. You know, where there's just technologies in there that are just there from backwards compatibility standpoint. You know, it's not just the added cost, which is sort of insulting, but the added complexity and putting the onus on the user, not just financially, but also from a, sort of a functional standpoint, to go and find and do that stuff and not just putting it in there, you know? It's just the wrong approach.
I'm just thinking about what they keep in Windows. And somebody actually brought up Solitaire. I mean, Solitaire's gotten more upgrades than Media Center. So has, I guess, Minesweeper.
Well, it also has more users than Media Center, by the way.
This is true. This, you know, before the days of networking and internet, we would just be on Solitaire when we were in the office because that's what you'd be doing. But I mean, but if there are more iterations of that out there, it's just kind of strange to see that still be in there. I mean, Notepad's
still
there.
There's all kinds of stuff. Windows Journal is still in there. Windows Fax and Scan is still in there. You know, the sound recorder is still in there.
Sound recorder still in there?
No. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah, WordPad obviously still in there, even updated a little bit, which is strange. But there's all kinds of stuff that's still in there, you know. I know that, you know, I think the issue with Media Center is just that it's not the future and that they have a new, more modern bet on digital media functionality that's, you know, metro oriented and uses what used to be the Zoom services on the back end and all that stuff. And that's fine. But it's also sort of arbitrary, and not to get off on another topic, but I mean, I think that in some ways, this is another little issue that I think is dogging the Windows team right now, which is their, you know, they talk so much about how they're reimagining Windows. And they're reimagining everything. You know, if they didn't invent it, they're kind of getting rid of it. They're even trying to get rid of NTFS, you know, and they're replacing it with a new file system that probably will be in Windows 9 now. That is something they created that's, you know, new and different and not quite as full-featured as the thing it's replacing. There's a lot of that stuff going on. I think Media Center is a relic of a bygone era, and that this new team is not interested in that. They want to do their own new stuff. And, you know, it's healthy in some ways to start over from scratch, but you also lose stuff when you do that. And I think you have to be careful about the right mix of new and old there. And I just think that this is it's just a bad decision on every level.
So I've got a question about DVD playback, if I may interject. Mm-hmm. So if they're expecting OEMs to bundle their own software, what about for Microsoft Signature?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to see how they handle Signature with Windows 8. You know, I have an entry in here for the show about Microsoft Signature, which is a program that Microsoft has that very few people know about, and mostly because while you can get it through their online store, most people will probably get it through the Microsoft retail stores, and there aren't that many of those yet, and most of them are out in the West Coast. So basically, this is a program where Microsoft, it's actually a lot more homespun than most people would probably believe, but Microsoft buys these PCs from the PC maker. It takes them into their office. It opens up the box. It blows away the version of Windows that's on there, and it replaces it with a clean copy of Windows that has been optimized for that particular machine. And they install a couple of Microsoft add-on programs like Windows Live Essentials and the Zune software and I think the Bing desktop and some other things like that. Put it back in the box, and when someone buys it, you're buying a box that was opened by a guy at Microsoft. That's literally how they do it. And the benefit of this is that these machines tend to start up and shut down and go to sleep much more quickly. They don't have any of the crapware that the OEM puts on there. And then they perform, it's hard to say if they perform any faster really in the real world. But the trick with the Signature stuff, I think, is whether these things retain this performance advantage over time. But the kind of secret behind it is if you do live near a Microsoft store, you can always bring these things in for service, which can be very handy and sort of like an Apple-like experience, and that they can do tuning for you in the store, which is nice. There's nothing to stop you from buying it online, but obviously you get a better experience in-house. You know, as far as Windows 8 goes, I don't know what their plans are for Windows 8. But I would imagine it's going to be along the lines of what they do in Windows 7, where they configure it in such a way that, you know, the start menu isn't overloaded with, you know, HP or Dell icons or whatever. They don't have a bunch of stuff in the taskbar. And they'll probably have similar rules for how the start screen works, where, you know, there aren't too many of these extraneous tiles for things that you don't really care about. But I guess we'll have to wait and see what they do there exactly.
Now, the Signature series has been around for a while, or this program. But it caught fire this week because there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about it, like it was brand new. I mean...
I'm not actually positive he wrote about it as if it were brand new. What was more amusing to me or distressing was that other publications, including some pretty mainstream tech publications that I'm not going to name, wrote stories about, oh, Mike, did you know that Microsoft is doing this now? You know, when this thing has actually been around for about 2 years. And there was an awful article on a tech blog of some kind. Again, I'm not going to name them. I'm not trying to call them out like that. But where it basically boiled down to Microsoft is charging you $99 to get rid of crapware, you know. Microsoft can't control how PC makers sell their products, you know, at least up to a point. And there is, there are good aspects to this partner model that they have, just like there are bad aspects. I think most people would agree that the crapware stuff is a bad part of it. Although, by the way, some people actually like that stuff. Microsoft has a vision for what they think Windows should look like when it goes out on a new computer, and the PC makers don't always agree. So I don't believe there's any cost difference when you buy a signature PC. I believe that the $99 thing was this notion that Microsoft might be offering a signature service, which they will offer the customers, again, if you come into the store, that they can apply to their existing PCs, which is kind of interesting. Kind of like a Microsoft version of PC Decrapifier, if you will.
But they're charging $99 for that. Is it worth $99? Let's assume this is, it's never happened before. Is it worth $100 to clean up your system like that, you think?
You know, it's hard for me to say because I'm fairly technical, but when I think to what I do with a new computer, it always involves getting rid of the stuff that's on there, you know? And my most recent, that's a good picture. I'm eating an oyster in that picture, by the way.
Listeners, we're looking at the Microsoft signature page, and then it says, industry experts have spoken, and there's a glowing picture of Paul Theriot, who appears to be eating lunch, saying PCs with signature from Microsoft are quicker.
That is it's a rooftop in Los Angeles.
Better organized. That's
I forget what I was saying. You distracted me with the picture.
I'm sorry.
Is it worth $99? Right. I just bought a new computer, for example, and this time, for the first time, I didn't actually blow away the disk and put my own stuff on it. This time, I actually just took out the disk and I put in an SSD, and I installed Windows 8, but I prefer personally to have that basic Windows experience. Like, I don't want all that stuff. I couldn't care less what's on there. But I'm not a typical consumer, right? So when somebody buys a computer, I mean, one of the pieces of advice that I would give them would be to spend a considerable amount of time, probably, getting rid of that stuff that they don't want and going through them one at a time, you know? We had the guy from Signature on probably a year ago, Kevin Egan. It's time consuming, and it's kind of dumb that you have to do it. And if you have Windows 7, I mean, one of the nice things you can do, and kind of a decent tip, if you will, is that you can run a system backup at that time, and then you can restore from that backup instead of using the PC maker's restore disks, and you'll come back to that pristine computer, not the one that has all the crapware on it. If you're lucky, you'll get a PC from a PC maker who will include a restore disk for the operating system and then a restore disk for the applications and let you choose which of the applications actually get installed. But that's not a given, and it's actually, I think, increasingly rare. So I think the signature thing makes a lot of sense. I mean, a lot of sense. I really do.
Yeah, a lot of manufacturers charge extra for those recovery disks, or I don't know what they're going to have for Ultrabooks. I don't know if they're going to come with DVDs, or they're going to come with USB drives, or any
idea? The ones I bought come with and actually, this is true of desktop computers, even ones that have all the disks and everything. They usually don't come with disks anymore, right? They come with a program you can run to create your own disks. And if you have an Ultrabook, you need to figure out some kind of a external drive on your own. That's just something you have to do. So I suspect most of those people probably never create that backup, you know, that restore disk or set of restore disks. And that's too bad, you know. I think that Apple ships a version of their OS right on a USB memory key. And it seems to me like that would be an excellent solution for the PC world as well, since we can already install Windows, put the Windows setup files on a USB key anyway. Those things have to be fairly cheap, and those would work great with any computer.
They did that with the original Airs, but we got a bunch of Mac Pros with Lion that did not come with anything.
And nowadays... Nowadays they do what they do when you install Lion. They actually have a recovery partition. They partition your drive. They don't explain that at all because that's it's a smart move. Don't say, "Hey, we're going to keep 2 gigabytes for ourselves, and we want to do recovery." You can go ahead and do that, so you don't have to worry about
it. That's fine, unless you blow away the recovery partition, right?
Right. That's assuming they let you do that. You have to
is there something that prevents you from doing it?
You pretty much don't see it until you need to do anything.
But if you go to Disk Utility, you can wipe it away.
Yes. If you went to Disk Utility, which was hidden, in Applications Utilities Disk Utility, good luck with that. A lot of people don't use that. But if you're going to be adventurous, you could probably kill it.
Okay.
But yeah, I would imagine that the Ultrabook should come with a recovery partition, maybe. But
No, when you think about the way Windows 8 works, I suspect they're going to give the PC makers a way to get into this system. But we know that there's a kind of a push button reset functionality, right, in Windows 8. Unless the PC maker has been allowed to modify that, which, again, I bet they will be. it, you know, you could almost imagine a situation where you boot up your Windows 8 PC for the first time. It has all that crapware on it. And then you run push button reset, and you choose to blow away the computer and just install the operating system. That might be an interesting way to get rid of the crapware. And by the way, it would only take about 10 minutes anyway, so it's not a bad thing to try. But I suspect, like I said, that they'll probably allow the PC makers to integrate their stuff into that, and that that PC reset might literally reset it to the factory fresh condition, which in the case of a Dell or HP or whatever computer would include all of their additional software too.
That's right. I forgot about that feature. Like Microsoft announced they have several features to make your machine feel like the first day you get it. There's push to reset, and there's another one, right? There's like a couple of variants where it's...
Well, there's a refresh, yeah, that saves all your data and settings and so forth.
It's like what System Restore was supposed to be, I think. It's like, oh, yeah, my system used to be great then. I want it like that.
Yeah, I think it's what people thought System Restore was, yeah.
Yeah, that was always fun when you'd hit System Restore and said, okay, we're checking out things, we're making changes, and then it'd take about 40 minutes. You'd open it up and go, nothing has been changed to your system. And that's what it would say.
All you did was remove an application I installed. Thanks.
That's like, great. I don't really know why you couldn't have told me ahead of time that you weren't going to change anything, because shouldn't you know you're a computer?
I hear you, and you're right. I think, on the other hand, it's still a great feature, and at least we have it now, you know, so I'm glad it's there, I guess.
Okay, so we made Paul an optimist on today's episode. I'm glad.
Well, no, I mean, it's funny. I hear that complaint from people, like, oh, this is great, but it should have been Windows 10 years ago. You know, okay, fair enough, but it is here now, so, you know, neat, and it works great, whatever.
That's a positive way of saying it's here now, so shut up.
No, I mean,
I agree with that, actually.
Just trying to cast, as I so often do, cast it in a positive light.
That's Paul's MO. If you ever watched the show or read Paul's writings, you know he's basically, the middle name, yeah. It should be Paul Sunshine Therat. I mean, that should be his new Twitter account, but sure. We'll see about that. We should thank a sponsor. Let's thank GoToAssist. You know, working in IT can be really, really unpredictable and challenging. There are people who need your help right away, and they're pulling in all kinds of different directions at once, right? Because people have problems over there, and you don't know what to do. And things can break down at any time. It's not like, oh, yeah, guess what? It's going to schedule at 10 o'clock. Something's going to break at 10 o'clock. That's not how it works. And that's why we're so excited about GoToAssist by Citrix. It's going to help you stay on top of it all. Now, here's how this works. It's built to give you more control over your IT world. You can use the world-class remote support to solve your users' problems quickly from anywhere. And GoToAssist monitoring gives you customizable dashboards displaying performance of all networks, servers, and desktops. And this is really the kicker here. Proactive alerting. So here's the deal. You can actually see problems before they really get big. So you can see small problems, you can check your dashboards, and you can fix it, and your clients don't even know you've done anything because their systems are running nice and neat. Everything is running fine because you've taken care of it ahead of time because you have all these powerful tools. GoToAssist is so easy to use. It sets up in just minutes, and it's from Citrix, which you don't need me to say this, but it's a trusted leader in IT. It's Citrix we're talking about here. Now, if you want to try it out, you can sign up for your special 30-day free trial. Sign up for your special 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code Windows. That's GoToAssist.com, promo code Windows, and we thank them for their sponsorship of Windows Weekly. On to Windows 8 release preview. I didn't stutter. Microsoft
wrote it like that, yeah.
They actually have some features that they've shown off, I believe, like some kind of parental report if you want to check what your kids are doing or just if you want to spy on your friends, I guess.
Yeah, that's not actually new, by the way. One of the weird things about Microsoft, I guess, in these blog posts is they often will write about some topic, whatever it is. You know, here's something that's in Windows 8. And some of it is new and some of it isn't. You know, so the activity reporting stuff that was in the parental controls, which they're now calling family safety, actually existed back in Windows Vista. They've had that for a while.
I think the difference there is because when Vista was around, I had no child. Now
yes.
That 8 is around, am now very nosy. What are you looking at there, kid? Want to know. But it looks like a lot prettier because I think I did remember the old one. Not as pretty as these reports. They look like you get like graphs.
The report is pretty. Yeah.
It looks like.
Well, no, they did that. You could get that stuff via email before too. I think what they've done this time around that's interesting is in Windows 7 they actually split part of the parental controls out and you can get additional functionality through Windows Live Essentials. There's a family safety piece that's in that. It's not actually clear what's going to happen with that now in Windows 8 because they're getting rid of Windows Live Essentials. So we'll have to hold off on that bit of it. But They've tweaked the parental controls in some interesting ways, but I think the nicest one they've added is that there was always this they didn't call this in the past. They're calling it curfew now, but you used to be able to look at a grid that made up the week with all the hours of the week, and you could draw blocks in the points of time where it was okay for your kid to use the computer. So you could say something like, well, on weekdays, maybe he could use the computer from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., and then the weekends, maybe it would be from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. or whatever, however you wanted to set it up. And then once you did that, your child would go to log in, and if it was the correct time, then he could, and if it wasn't, he couldn't. So that carries forward. But now there's also the notion of you can only spend a certain amount of time per day on the computer. You can set that for weekdays and weekends. You can set it differently for every single day of the week. So you could specify something in there where you say, Mark, my son can only use the computer for 2.5 hours on certain days of the week. But on, say, the weekend days, well, maybe on those days he can use it for 4 hours. And that's, it's a small thing, right? In fact, most people would probably never even notice it was in there. But that's actually a big difference. That makes a big difference. That's nice. It's just a nice little evolution, I think, of the capabilities that have been in there for years, but most people just don't know about.
That seems to be Microsoft's latest thing. It's like, okay, look, we have a bunch of features and stuff. You don't know what's there. We're going to show it to you. This is why we have a ribbon.
That is why they have a ribbon, by the way. So, for several years there, that they get all the feedback from users, and the top 10 requests of those, eight or nine of them every time, were features that were already in Office that people didn't know because the stuff was so buried in there that they couldn't find it. And so the ribbon was an attempt to surface that functionality in ways that people would then discover it.
Windows should really have a way to restore an old file. That should have been there 10 years ago.
Yikes. Alex, that sounded a lot
like
that.
That
sounded like a leading question.
I'm just saying.
So, yeah, everyone is familiar, or I'm sure everyone has at least heard of this time machine feature that Apple has.
It has the
spacey animation and everything. What most people don't know is that Microsoft had that years earlier. It actually debuted in 2003 in Server. So at that time, you had to be connecting your clients to Windows Server 2003, and you had to be using folder redirection. And the capability existed up on the server, and you could get back to previous versions of files. In Windows, I guess it would be Vista, and also in Windows 2000, well, let's say Vista, they moved it into the client, and that functionality, no one knows it's there. You can test it right now in Windows Vista or 7. Go into your Documents folder, find a document that you use all the time, right-click Properties, and one of the tabs will be Previous Versions, and it will have all the versions of the file, and you can get them back. Just like Time Machine, but not with a pretty interface. And so in Windows 8, they have created yet another interface that no one's ever going to find called File History that works in basically exactly the same way, although the funny thing is the interface for getting it back is kind of a halfway house between the way they used to do it and the way that Apple does it. It's not nearly as spacey and crazy looking, but it looks a little bit like Windows Media Player, and it lets you go back in time, if you will, to the contents of a folder or whatever, like in this screenshot you're showing. And, that's a horribly out-of-date screenshot. So
sorry.
That's okay. Find previous versions of files or folders it's a nicer interface, so. The problem with file history is that it's not on by default. You have to enable it. So previous versions was actually on by default. I think the reason for that, and I'm just guessing here, is that we're switching to a lot of SSD type drives. And I think the 5 gigabytes or whatever it might take up by default maybe was a little onerous for these lower capacity drives that we tend to use these days. You can also turn it on and enable it so that it works across a network share. A computer that has a lot more storage on it, and it will cache locally. So if you're out on the road, that will work and so forth. But yeah, so he's showing the interface now. But, it's similar again, it's never going to be as pretty as what Apple does, but nicer than it was, I guess.
So Microsoft basically has a presentation problem. So they can't communicate their message via their blog. Their operating system hides features that are really useful. Their Office software, which is amazing, has so many features, in fact, that you can't find stuff. So they had to redesign it, which ticked off a lot of people because they couldn't find the stuff that they already knew.
Now, but on the flip side, like I said before, I have a job.
Yes. Thankfully, there's
so
a whole,
that's nice.
There's a whole,
I'm really
like,
happy.
Cottage industry. It's almost like, yeah. It's like a shanty town outside of Redmond.
It is literally a shanty town, yeah.
So what else was in the Windows 8 release preview? I know Microsoft put up a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, Microsoft curiously leaked some stuff the other day, which I thought was kind of funny. They have a web-based version of the store that's coming, just like they do for Windows Phone. And yesterday or the day before, they updated the app pages for some of the bundled apps, and they showed off some interfaces that aren't in the consumer preview that are coming in the release preview. And also, if you were paying attention, some items just listed as text that were things that are not there today. So one of the items they listed was that the Photos app, for example, all of the media apps, you can expect them all to change very dramatically. They were very half-heartedly done in the consumer preview. They were listed as app previews. Most of them were just terrible. So Photos, music, and video especially, major upgrades in the release preview. You know, the Photos app gets a new user interface. It connects to all of your connected machines now, so that if you are using that SkyDrive app and you know you can connect your machines as trusted PCs, you can access the photo collections on those computers even when you're not on the home network, which is kind of interesting. And it's going to pick up photo acquisition capabilities. So, you know, one of those weird issues with Metro versus desktop is that, especially with photos, there are certain things you have to do in the desktop. You know, get photos off of a camera, edit photos, publish them to an online service. You know, those things are not available in the Photos app, but apparently in the release candidate, I'm sorry, the release preview, which is the release candidate, they're adding at least the acquisition bit of that. So you'll be able to do more, you know, just from the Metro environment. But there are going to be, there are several new apps that are going to be included in this release. There are anything that was an app in the Windows 8 consumer preview virtually, certainly all of the app previews, you know, mail, messaging, calendar, Windows Reader, and so forth. All of those things are going to be updated. And when you think about the delta between Windows 8 consumer preview and the Windows 8 release preview, that is really where all the action is going to be, because the base platform itself has actually been done for quite some time. I mean, you're going to see some evolution in the user interface stuff, minor evolution, I should say, you know, nothing dramatic. You know, they're not going to suddenly put a start menu back, a start button or whatever. But these apps, which are developed independently and separately and are much further behind the platform, are going to be a major change. And arguably will be the major change that occurs in this release. So that stuff is very interesting.
I'm surprised by this. Windows Reader, wasn't that killed? I thought it was Microsoft Reader a long time ago. That was their...
This is a different version of it? Different thing. Okay. So the Microsoft Reader was a ebook platform that they had, or, you know, like a kind of an EPUB competitor.
No, I actually bought a book from their store.
Like, I did, like, too. Yeah.
On my tablet PC... My
I read H.G. Wells' Time Machine on Pocket PC device, for example, with a stylus. That was great.
That's what was cool about it. That's right. That's why I had this, because I had the slate and I had my HP iPac with a keyboard that I could.
Well, remember they did like subpixel rendering and stuff. You know, this was like their big thing. This is something we just take for granted now. You know, the pixels, the text rather look really nice. Windows Reader in Windows 8 is just a PDF and XPS reader. It doesn't have any editing capabilities per se. It has some commenting capabilities, but it's basically just a full screen PDF reader, I think is the way to think of it.
Yeah, so that is not what I thought it was. It's just so you don't have to use Adobe right away. You don't have to use Adobe Acrobat Reader. You can just look at PDFs in the Metro interface.
Yeah, I mean, depending on your usage patterns, you're probably going to want Adobe anyway, but at least there's something in the box that works. And if you're using a tablet, you're going to be using it for full screen anyway. Reader's fine. I don't personally use it because I'm an actual computer user and I use the desktop, but you know, whatever. It's in there. So,
well, I mean, it's important that Microsoft building these features to the Metro apps, because this idea, this is a lot of the pushback to IE, is that you get kicked out of the experience. You go from, I'm in Metro, now I got to go to the desktop version. They're not necessarily the same. It would be nice to have the same feature sets in both, so you don't have to keep going, wait, why does this look different? Because I'm sure, like, we're going to be able to figure it out. The viewers will be able to figure it out. But it's, again, that general public who are like, why are there two of these?
I think there are going to be some weird moments for people, right? I mean, obviously, the big one is when they see the start screen and they're like, what am I looking at here? You know, some people will get to the desktop easily, some won't. And I think the interactions between these things are going to be weird for people. When you double-click on a PDF file on your desktop and suddenly the screen goes away and a new full screen thing comes up, I think that's going to be confusing to people, right? I don't know how they're going to figure out how to get out of that, you know. So that's not what you want. But at least in the past, if you launched an application that wasn't what you wanted or some window popped up that wasn't what you wanted, you could see around it the rest of your stuff. You know, the Metro thing is going to be a little strange for people because when something comes up that you don't want, it's the whole screen. And I think for a lot of normal people, they're going to have a hard time figuring out how to get out of that.
I'm sure they'll hit that Windows key or some kind of key, but like that's the home button, right? That always works. I know for the tablets, that's what's going to be there because that seems to be the...
Yeah, that will always work, right. But I'm talking about people who upgrade or people who buy a normal computer and certainly people who have expectations about how the desktop works because it's worked that way for so many years are going to be really confused by some of this stuff.
So we need some Metro tooltips just come up after a while. It's like, you have not interacted with the app for 3 seconds. Are you confused? Click here. The return of Metro Clippy. You'll have like hipster glasses.
There's been some, you know, there was some work done to create a an animation during setup that would kind of give you the basics. And it's not clear at this time now if they're going to actually use it, but they need something in the box. It's similar to what Apple does, I think, where you, not like that, but something that will help them know what these things are. Because if you're using this thing on a computer that has a keyboard and mouse only, there are certain interactions that you have to do. If you're using it on a touch-based screen, there are other interactions that you have to do. And these things aren't, even though basically everything is possible across all those different input devices, they're often very different. And I think this is, you know, again, I just think it's going to be confusing at first. But again, thank you, Microsoft, because this has pretty much sealed the next year of my life, what I'm going to write about. So I do appreciate it.
You could have your own Metro app. When you launch it, it explains what happens. You know, you can just have a bunch of videos. Your own
you channel. Could. If only you could have all those things running on the screen at the same time. That would be great.
You could kick it out to the desktop. Industry experts have spoken. Thank you for my job.
Yes, thank you. Right, thank you for my career.
I'm just trying to figure out.
If only I could figure out some way to get paid directly by Microsoft, that would just be perfect.
Well, that means you could write on the Building Windows 8 blog. Like, you could just have the TLDR version of it on top, you know, the nice summary. Too long.
My version would only be that version. That would be the quickest thing in the world.
Well, I'm sure you could do things like add, I don't know, headings and bullet points and, I don't know.
Metrics and...
some kind of
charts and data,
and when you reach that 5,000 word mark, you go, yeah, wait a second, I think I've written too much. That's what they need to start building. Maybe they need
thousand,
a Metro.
Maybe 1,000 would be the limit. Yeah.
Well, maybe at 5,000, at each 1,000, there should be a notification telling you, this is getting more complex, more confusing. 6,000, nobody's reading this. 8,000. You can put your will in here. Nobody's going to notice.
Yeah, it's like a Thomas Harris book or, you know, like any latter-day Stephen King book where it's like going good for a while, but then it goes off the rails and suddenly you realize this thing needed to be about 1,000 pages less long than it is. And, you know, it just needs editing.
That's all.
Editing for clarity.
What's that Hemingway? Is Hemingway's quote, write drunk, edit sober?
There you go.
Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe that's why the posts don't make sense. That's almost, I think, slander or libel. I always mix those up. So I hope, I'm just kidding. I'm sure you
guys. I hope it's at least one of those.
You hope? I'm saying neither. I don't know what exactly you guys are doing over there at Redmond and exactly why your posts are so, so confusing. But again, we thank you because without you guys, we have nothing to talk about. It'd just be, hey, Paul, how's it going?
I know. Nothing. They just explained everything very clearly. I have nothing to do.
It's like all our links would be to the Building Windows 8 blog or the what is the Windows Team blog, which sometimes I read as Windows Steam blog.
These things are so convoluted that I try to explain them, and then people will write in and be like, actually, it's even more complex than that, and they point out something that I missed. And, you know, it really is difficult kind of shoveling through all this stuff.
Well, that's why I love when Microsoft puts in the videos right in the middle of their posts. And, like, in about 3 minutes, they kind of explain everything, and then you're like, oh.
Why doesn't the blog post just say this? The video is a classic because you like, you know, you kind of like, oh, boring. Oh, my God, boring. Oh, video. Cool. Okay. And then you click play and then you kind of just forget about the rest of it.
That's the way to do it. You know, just they hide so many great points in the middle of the post, but the videos always fun to see. There was one video. This is a total tangent where basically a hardware engineer was trashing basic every piece of hardware that exists now. because Windows 8 requires, you know, edge-to-edge glass, and we've got to be able to do this. Yeah. And it runs really poorly on this version that we got last year. You're like, oh, but I what if you own that? Like, it means you immediately want to get a new PC that can handle Windows 8. It was just this very confusing thing. If you were a hardware partner for Microsoft, I would imagine you'd be like, why are you telling people this?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Media Center post is maybe my all-time favorite because I just looked it up so I could get this right. But the title of this post is Making Windows Media Center Available in Windows 8, which is not what this post is about at all. First of all, Windows Media Center is not available in Windows 8. Let's just get that one out of the way. But the thing that blows me away about this post is that it's actually about the fact that DVD playback is being taken out of Windows 8. So they don't put that in the title. And if you actually were to look it up, the word, if you will, DVD, does not occur until hundreds of words into this article. And the part where they actually say that DVD playback is not included is, I looked it up at one, I think it was like 700 and something pages in.
700 words in.
Words.
They're not pages. If there were pages, I'd be really giving them a hard time.
Yeah, somewhere way down in there it says, customers who are interested in Media Center have a convenient way to get it. Windows Media Player will continue to be available, but without DVD playback support. It's like, what? You know, it's strange, but wonderful.
Strange, but wonderful. Microsoft, you confuse us sometimes, but we love you for it. It's just, yeah, that post in particular got a lot of confusion. Maybe this is an SEO thing. Maybe they just want to mess with competitors out there trying to scrape the pages and go, what's this post about? Well, the title says Media Center. Clearly, it's about Media Center.
The problem is, and if you've been paying attention, they've been bringing up Media Center over time. Media Center came up as long ago as before Build, right, last fall. And Steven Sinofsky at that time said something along the lines of, look, nobody uses this thing, but don't worry. We are going to include it because we know the people who use it love it and they're really vocal and so forth. And so later on they revealed that it would be an added cost extra, you know, not really included in. So by the time this post came out and you saw the title, it says, you know, making Windows Media Center available in Windows 8, you know, the presumption is, if you've been paying attention, that this is really just maybe a minor detail about how they're in fact going to deliver this update. That, and then you read it and they don't say how much it's going to cost, which would have been one of those interesting little tidbits that you would want to know. But it's if you're really paying attention, you know, you realize it's not even really about that. That there isn't much information in there about Media Center per se. You know, they mentioned this Windows 8 Pro pack and so forth, but it's really about this other stuff. You know, and I find that to be kind of insidious.
Yeah, but between the music app and the photos app and the videos app, all these apps, aren't they effectively recreating Media Center just in separate applications on that start screen instead of it being this separate application that has the same elements?
Sure. I you know, this is paralleling the way that Windows Phone and other smartphones work. I mean, so, you know, there's a videos app on the iPad. There's a music app on the iPad. There's a store app on the iPad, you know, so they're doing and there's a photos app, right? So that's the way these things are done. I mean, I think that's okay. You could argue that this parallels the way that, you know, just software is going. Simpler apps that have specific purposes, you move in and out of the apps, you know.
Well, Windows
not
Phone
one
has
app
the,
that does everything.
Windows Phone has the all-in-one Zoom app.
Aren't they killing the Zoom entirely?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But it's still an all-in-one thing that does video and music.
That is true.
Windows Media Player still continues.
I think you can expect that not to be the case going forward. But yes.
I'd expect desktop Windows Media Player to exist forever. Knock on wood there.
Well, but there's another thing that, so obviously they moved it forward. They took out DVD playback. But, and I haven't actually done a side-by-side comparison yet. Maybe I should. But I bet that thing has not changed at all, basically. Not in any meaningful way, right? They're never going to update this. I mean, this is the past. And I think, you know, these guys are focused on the new stuff. I do agree that for a lot of people, you know, the types of people that would own a tablet are not, obviously they don't need DVD playback, and would be the types of people who would be interested in these online services that will sit at the back of this thing. There's no reason you couldn't install iTunes on this and use Apple services or whatever. That's fine. It would work. That's fine. You know, but it's... The problem is, you know, people who know Media Center in this case specifically know that it was really kind of a great thing, and that it very easily could have been extended to support all of these great online services as well. and that they could have done something that would have worked very well in a kind of a 10-foot UI experience on a home theater type PC. It just would have been a great, you know, in many ways is the prototype Metro experience. You know, it's like a little Metro digital media UI all in and of itself. But that's not the future. Obviously, it's this other stuff. So,
and Metro's large fonts remind me of a giant, like a 10-foot interface. It's like, this is too large. I don't need to see it this closely.
Yeah.
Monstrously large fonts. And this is how they could also fix the desktop. If they just write very largely, desktop.
Right.
On the just top. Like, no, it's a Metro app.
Big fonts.
Yeah, totally get it. Big fonts are the answer. And let's see, before we talk more about more Microsoft stuff, including their search engine changes. That's right. Things have moved to the left. Not in a political way, but in a different way. Actually, alignment. But we'll get to that in a minute. Let's thank Ford for their sponsorship of Windows Weekly. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ford, which gives customers the power of choice with a full line of electric and hybrid electric vehicles. Two new Ford electric vehicles are the 2012 Ford Focus Electric and the 2013 Ford Fusion Energy Plug-in Hybrid. Now, if you like getting data about your car and you want to know what's going on with your vehicles, if you're watching Windows Weekly, you like knowing what's going on with your stuff, this stuff is awesome here. Now, both models make use of a suite of driver information systems onboard and offboard, so you can help manage the recharge process. You can determine the most eco-friendly driving routes. You can remotely control vehicle charge and preconditioning settings. You can check the battery states. You can maximize energy efficiency. You can do all of that stuff. There's also a unique execution of sync with My Ford Touch Driver Connect technology, which is optimized for electrified driving by configuring vehicle information such as fuel level, battery power level, and average and instant miles per gallon. There's a feature that shows you how much energy you capture with regenerative braking. So when you use a regenerative braking system, after each full stop, you'll see what effect it's had on your range. Plus, My Ford Mobile, access to Ford's website and smartphone app, so you can access your vehicle status, such as state of your charge and your current range. You can program charge settings and download vehicle data for analysis. Plus, there's value charging feature, which is powered by Microsoft, allows Ford customers to take advantage of off-peak or reduced rates from the utility without a complicated setup process. Now, this just blows my mind here. Now, the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric is 100% electric, gas-free. It will never need an oil change ever. No oil changes. So you're not stopping and you're wasting money on an oil change. Not this car, not the 2012 Ford Focus Electric. It features a powerful state-of-the-art battery. It's rated the most fuel-efficient 5-passenger vehicle in America. So if you're thinking like, I have a family, I got to put a bunch of people in the car, you don't have to waste money on gas or oil on this thing, because it gets 110 miles per gallon E, which is the equivalent measure of gasoline fuel efficiency for electric mode operation. If I had this thing, I could just go back and forth to work, and I probably wouldn't have to charge it once a month or so, because it's only a mile. This is just unbelievable. It has a best-in-class driving range of 76 miles. So if you want to take a trip, you know, want to go out, you can go ahead and do that. And if you're like, 76 miles, that's not a lot of miles, but it has the best-in-class 240-volt charge time. So it charges really fast. It can be fully charged in about 4 hours when connected to the optional 240-volt home charging station. That's crazy fast. If you want some perspective, that's about half the time it takes to fully charge the Nissan Leaf. So it takes 4 hours to charge. You're good to go. Now, the 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available for purchase right now at EV-certified dealers. The 2013 Ford Fusion Energy Plug-in Hybrid is coming in 2013 and is projected to achieve fuel efficiency rating of over 100 miles per gallon E. You can learn more about the electric technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. Again, that's Ford.com/technology, and we thank Ford for their sponsorship of Windows Weekly. On to changing of the search engines. So Bing did some changes. Google responded by changing their stuff. What exactly is going on with the search engines? Why does everything look different when I'm looking up, when I want to make my decision?
I find myself in this uncomfortable position with this stuff where I don't really think I like it, but I have to kind of test it, and I'm curious, you know, how other people react to it. But I saw something really funny about the Bing update, which actually Google in their own post sort of alluded to this as well, where, you know, they added this social networking connectivity. So today it's basically just Facebook. It's really Facebook and Windows Live, and eventually will be other services, including Google Plus, by the way. But today you can sign in with Facebook. And it provides you with this column in the search results page that provides you with information from your social networking contacts, right? And so maybe you should type in something like, look for a particular kind of restaurant in your area, or
like I think it's
the, you know, or movies or whatever. You know, those are the
restaurants.
Those are the big ones where you might actually have some activity over there on the side, you know. So, you know, I think for this kind of search that this type of functionality might be useful. I find the Ask Friend box over there to be a little strange, because what you're really doing is saying, okay, I didn't find what I wanted on Bing, so now I'll actually post to Facebook, which is what that does. And it will include a link to the search results that you're looking at, which is kind of odd. And then you can wait for those people to, you know, your friends and contacts to get back to you that way. So the criticism from others and from Google is that, yeah, I guess you could ask your friends, but wouldn't you rather have the, you know, combined intelligence of over 500 million objects that are in our database and our understanding of the relationships behind them? You know, in other words, that when you're looking for things online, what you really want is something intelligent, not something potentially goofy that one of your contacts might have said. And that's cute, but I think that the Google approach makes sense for mainstream searches. You know, you're researching something, right? The actual reason that this thing exists. I want to find out something about an event in history, or I want to look up a famous person or whatever it is. People Google search these things. But when you're looking for information about a restaurant in your area, for example, I think actually asking your friends is actually not necessarily a bad way to go. I mean, anyone who was... my favorite restaurant in Dedham, for example, got a really bad review from someone who for some reason had some bad experience that was atypical for this place. And every time I look at this restaurant online, I see this review written by someone who lives out of state and was just in the area visiting and felt it was okay to throw a little, you know, dirt bomb review on these guys. And I always feel really bad about that. I have no idea what this person, who this person is, or what their problem is. But, you know, frankly, I'm more interested in my family or friends' opinions about places that I visit regularly or might want to visit regularly, because they actually go there and know about these things. You know what I mean? So these two updates are not related really in any way whatsoever. I mean, I look at the Google thing and I think, well, this is Google being Google. This is what Google does. Very math driven, very engineering driven. And, you know, Bing and Microsoft are approaching this, not, I don't want to say from a niche status, but more from like a vertical search status. You know, they keep calling Bing a decision engine, you know, and that this is kind of entirely in keeping with their notion that for certain types of searches, Bing is just going to be a better place to go. And so we'll see. I'm not actually convinced that my friends appearing in a, you know, a Facebook pane over there is what I want yet, but I'm trying. You know, we'll see.
Well, I mean, Google already had their personalized search. I forget what they ended up fully calling it, but you can always see what your friends checked out. And I always have that thing closed off. So, I mean, I could see, I mean, your point, Paul, like you want to know what your friends think, because you don't know if people are astroturfing reviews. You don't know if people are gaming SEO. You don't know what's going on there. You get these search results that show up based on an algorithm. You really want to know an actual answer. And I've always found Bing good for local stuff. Google, I've always found terrible for local. It's always like, oh, this is a great thing you could find in Wisconsin. It's like, I don't live in Wisconsin. And I'm not going to Wisconsin.
Yeah, and the ad will be, so, you know, did you want to order sushi online? You know, that'll be like the inline ad on the Google thing. It's like, no, I'm looking for a restaurant here. You know, it's this, yeah, different things. You know, I don't know. I think the attempts that have been made thus far to introduce what they're calling real-time search results, or, you know, results that come from Twitter or Facebook, or in the future, say, Google Plus or whatever, have so far not been great. I think this Microsoft thing that they're doing here with Bing is interesting, and we'll see. I need to use it more. I don't think that people necessarily think this way. I think people just use what they use, right? So if I am stuck on Google for whatever reason, and that's just how my mind works, I want to search for something on Google, it's not going to occur to me to use Bing to do a particular kind of search. And I suppose if I was really active on Facebook and wanted advice about a restaurant in the area, I would just post that on Facebook, wouldn't I? I don't know.
Well, you might. Maybe. I guess the thinking is you show up to your IE machine and Bing is the default there, And you go in, you do a search, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's connected to Facebook. Because, you know, why not? Because it'll help out Microsoft. They own 1.6% of Facebook. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's maybe just coaxing. This is going to sound ridiculous. Coaxing people to use Facebook. Because, you know, because Bing can really influence the amount of users Facebook has. It should be the other way around, actually. It should be like, do you want to search for this on Bing at Facebook? Yep. Because they have the 910 million people. I'm not sure how many people are using Bing quite regularly.
Well, it doesn't matter how many people use Facebook. I'm not, you're not going to get results from Facebook. You're getting results from the people you know on Facebook, right? So you're only going to have dozens or maybe hundreds of contacts on Facebook. So that's actually a very small group of people. But roughly speaking, you know, but that makes sense because I think in this case, what you're typically asking for or what you would typically be interested in from them, I don't care what my friend thinks about Napoleon, right? But if I'm researching Napoleon, I mean, I want actual information. I want good sources. I think that in that case, what Google is doing with this, what are they calling it, like a knowledge engine or something, I think that has the potential to be interesting. I didn't try this, but, you know, in fact, I will just try it now. I can't try it now because the Google service isn't live yet, is it?
It's rolling out slowly. I think one or two people have it here. Not sure why.
Yeah, so if I type in the word Apple and I search on Google, everything at the top of this thing, in fact, it's all about Apple Computer. Now,
are you logged in?
I was just going to say, actually, I'm not. So I was going to say, I don't know why that is. Is it making some assumption about me based on, I'm not logged in this case, but you can see where that would change it. But also maybe just my search history might change it. So it's hard to know what they're doing, which I think is always the problem with Google, but there's even a map for Apple, which is apparently showing me all of the Apple stores that are in my area. And apparently these things are like Starbucks now. But, you know, so it's interesting. I mean, I think that I think Google's approach, which is really kind of a bare knuckle mathematical, you know, a way of looking at things, is what most people are going to be looking for when they're researching, which is still how I tend to use search engines personally, and I suspect that most people do as well. So
it's funny. I thought when you looked up Apple, I'm like, maybe Google's thinking this idea that if you have to check a search engine for an Apple, you're obviously, you know enough that you know what the fruit is. But I looked up chair, and they actually showed the definition from Wikipedia what a chair is.
Right. So, that doesn't appear for Apple.
No. So I guess.
Yeah. So some decision has occurred, right? Some determination has been made.
That if you're looking up Apple on
Google. How would you look up Apple? If you really wanted, if you were actually going to write a term paper about apples.
Red fruit.
You know, apple fruit or something. Yeah, it's weird. You have to outthink it. Yeah.
You have to, there we go. That actually brings up the Apple Wikipedia page as the number one thing with apple fruit. But you need to know it's a fruit.
Right.
So maybe edible apple?
This article is about the fruit. It's not about the computer company.
Edible apple. Edible Apple turns up edibleapple.com, which is an Apple news, rumors, and analysis site. So you can't look it up that way. So you actually have to know a bit about you have to have some kind of base knowledge. What happens with Bing? Apple. Let's see.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Apple shows up. Apple the company.
Maybe that's what people search for Apple. Now, I just typed in Apple like a jerk. Let's see.
Not enough people searching for fruit out there. I'm not looking up onions. I'm sure we'll get the onion.
Yeah, no, it's all about Apple. Same thing.
Well, there we go. That's how it works. And we're going to try to not talk about Apple any further just because the search engines are fun to play with.
What a world we live in.
Yeah, you know, this is the future, Paul. You want to look up Apple, you can only find out about a technology company.
If you type in Apple with an S, right, actual apples come up, but the third result is still apple.com. You know, like the electronics company. That's crazy.
How many apples do you have? I have an iPad. I have an iPhone. Right.
Yeah.
There you go. There's your apples. So that was the search engines. We did the dueling search engines. We should have had dueling banjos while we were doing that little experiment. Let's go to the question and answer session because we've got a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And the first one was asked yesterday. And I was asked to ask you this.
Okay.
Now, at the Win Super site, there's a picture of you, Paul. You're drinking out of a coffee cup. Now, Ace Detect wants to know the origin of the coffee cup photo. Is it anti-Java or what?
No. I went to Rome probably 5 years ago now with my family, and we were caught out in the rain, and we went into a coffee shop that was nearby, and they had ginormous coffee mugs of different colors, pastel colors, green and red and blue, whatever. So you got whatever you got. And my wife and I ordered these giant latte things. That cup is actually humongous, right? That's not a normal cup. It's
like, not a forced perspective deal. That's just a
big... it's like four times the size of a normal mug. And, you know, if you've ever seen the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer, you might remember the beginning scene where that giant cappuccino is moving through the restaurant and Mike Myers gets it and he says, "Excuse me, I ordered the large cappuccino." You know, and it's like a gallon of cappuccino or whatever. And so it kind of reminded me of that. And I wanted to take a picture of it. And, you know, so I took a picture of my wife and my kids had hot chocolate or whatever. And my son asked me if he could take a picture with me. And I didn't want to be in the picture. So I said, yeah, but I'll drink out of it because I don't want my face in this. And it was like a throwaway thing. I didn't, you know, my son was, you know, he was a young kid. So I just did, you know, he just wanted to play with the camera, you know. And then later that we looked at the pictures and I'm like, wow, this picture is actually pretty cool. And so it kind of became the picture. But it's there are other pictures in that series. I think I published them at some point where pictures of my family at the table and everything, all of us with different, you know, mugs like that. But anyway, that's all it is. Just a vacation picture.
Yeah, Alex has also done it. And Jeff, they're intertwining arms. Mm-hmm. Is that also anti-Java, Alex?
Yes.
You all can get along. You can have API hooks.
I always liked Java. I mean, I think we've... you mean Java, the computer language, right?
Yes, I'm mocking. Because Sun sued Microsoft a couple years ago, won $20 million bucks for Microsoft's use of APIs.
What Microsoft did to Java was horrible, by the way. That was a long time ago, but that was back when Microsoft was being very predatory. They did take Java and turn it into something terrible. They turned it into a Frankenstein's monster. Sun was right to sue Microsoft, but that was terrible. A Visual J++ thing they did, or whatever it was called. Terrible. But I always, you know, I actually thought Java was great. In fact, in the early days, the weird thing about Java was this notion of a virtual machine. It was kind of a something that ran in its own environment, no matter what system you ran it on. And that seemed kind of hokey in the day. But it's funny to consider that the way computers and electronic devices have evolved, that's basically how everything works. It's how .NET works. I mean, a lot of these systems now use this notion of a runtime environment that is essentially what Sun used to call a virtual machine, not a virtual machine the way we now think of it.
With Microsoft going ahead and putting Media Center kind of on the outskirts there, how is an Xbox going to talk to your PC without Media Center?
That's a good question. If you're one of the few brave people that have tried to use Play 2 in Windows 7, you may know that the Xbox 360, and this has never changed, it's still true to this day, does not work as a Play 2 target unless you're in the Media Center extender environment. So obviously that it's related to this question, you know, if the Media Center environment goes away, how's that going to work? I would imagine that they're going to have to release some kind of a dashboard update this year that will support this and integrate better with Windows 8. If you look at Windows 8, even the consumer preview, and this stuff is dramatically improving in the release preview, there are media, well, actually, I'm not sure if they were enabled yet in the consumer preview, but the media apps will support this notion of Play to Xbox. So on the Windows side, we use technology that's kind of like an industry standard called DLNA that actually nobody really uses effectively, but it's kind of the industry standard version of AirPlay, right? Apple's technology. Apple's stuff always just works because Apple only uses it with Apple stuff. So it's very easy to play from an iPad to an Apple TV. Of course that works. So they're both Apple products. DLNA is meant to work between devices that are made by different companies that have no knowledge of each other. And, you know, it's more of a standard. So Microsoft is enabling something like AirPlay in Windows 8, this Play to but with the Xbox, where the Xbox effectively takes the place of the Apple TV in this scenario. So you could be browsing content on your tablet or on a laptop, but, you know, a tablet would be typically the way you would do it. And so you're looking at music, or you're looking at the videos app, you're browsing the store. You know, one of the things you can do is you can buy games for the Xbox through the Windows 8 interface, which is kind of a strange thing to do, but it is. I've actually done it already. That works in the consumer preview. If you have what's now called a Zune Music Pass, you could start a playlist going from the cloud, but play it to the Xbox so that it comes out over your home theater and thus through the speakers and, you know, in the house, the nice speakers, not just through the speakers in your tablet. So I think that the replacement for this stuff is going to partially be that, and hopefully be a more pervasive play, kind of play to, or I should say a simpler or more basic play to functionality that would require the dashboard to support that feature, which it doesn't right now. But you can use the Windows 8 tablet or machine as a sort of a virtual remote control for the Xbox, not for games, but for media playback and for store control and so forth. So I think that stuff combined is how they're going to do it.
Well, as long as they don't reuse some old names, I hope they don't use Squirt to Xbox. I hope they don't say it plays for sure on Xbox.
Yeah.
Whatever they're going to call it. Maybe just call it Send to Xbox.
No, I think it's just, I'd have to look. I think it's just called, I think it's called literally Play to Xbox.
Okay.
Or Play on Xbox, something like that.
Hopefully. And then Play On will get angry about that because they have another product.
But I mean, by the way, the Xbox, you know, this stuff was added to the Xbox a long time ago. The Windows Phone devices have a software called Xbox Companion, and there's an Xbox piece that you have to enable in the settings for that. And that's the interface that the Windows 8 stuff uses as well.
Another question. In terms of market capitalization, does it no longer make sense for Microsoft not to buy Nokia? Nokia market cap is down to under $10 billion, and they've got $6 billion in cash sitting around. So
yeah.
What do you think? Does it ever make sense for Nokia to be bought by Microsoft?
Right. That's a tough one because on the one hand, the day that Microsoft buys Nokia, the partnership stuff with everyone else falls apart. You know, Microsoft actually has a really strong relationship with Samsung on Windows Phone and then lesser relationships with other companies as well. But it's a tough one to figure out because once they do that, how could you as Samsung or these other companies believe that you would ever have any kind of equal footing? I mean, even right now, it's kind of a touchy topic, I think, for those people. On the other hand, if Microsoft does nothing and lets Nokia go downhill and die and go away, if that's what happens, I mean, that's obviously a death spiral for Windows Phone too. I guess I don't, you know, I'm not really an expert on the business side of things. I would say off the top of my head, there's probably a happy middle ground that could occur that where Microsoft doesn't have to buy them or bail them out. They could just invest in them, right? Couldn't Microsoft buy some, you know, percentage of whatever it is, non-voting shares in the company or whatever, just to provide them with a financial, you know, backing to keep them going. The problem with that, of course, is that that still sends a message that these guys weren't going to make it on their own and maybe this isn't a viable business as a result. So this is a tough one. I just don't think there's any good outcome here. If they do fail, no matter how it happens, however they bailed out or not, it's just a bad thing across the board for Windows Phone, certainly.
Yeah, Beatmaster's mentioning Nokia has some juicy patents. I guess that would be when the patent portfolio is worth it. But I mean,
Microsoft already, they're, I mean, unless someone else buys Nokia, Microsoft is already well and good with those patents, right? They have a huge partnership. Nokia's never going to sue Microsoft. I mean, they rely on Microsoft for their mobile platform. So they're free and clear as it is. I mean, it's kind of a tough thing to say you need to buy. Well, I guess you would, unless they were just going to fail. I mean, obviously at that point, it would make sense maybe to buy them, but.
And let's ask one more quick question before we get to picks. Why is Microsoft using Linux boxes for their super nodes? I believe this is related to the Skype super nodes that were replaced. It used to be a peer-to-peer kind of system. Now it's Microsoft. This is, I believe, unconfirmed, 10,000 super nodes.
I know nothing about that, but I this harkens back to when Microsoft bought Hotmail, and that system was originally running on, I want to say, FreeBSD or something. It was some kind of crazy non-Microsoft platform of some kind. So if this is Skype that you're talking about, obviously Skype was an independent company
very recently.
So I think you can expect that to go away.
Well,
So
the story is that Skype used to use like a peer-to-peer kind of system when it came to the super nodes, and it'd basically be piggybacking on other users' internet connections. And what Microsoft has done is replaced that peer-to-peer system with its own set of super nodes. I believe it's something like 10,000 Linux boxes, which are like very fortified. They're very secure from attacks. And so people are like, well, why is Microsoft using Linux? And like, so.
No, I have no idea.
So there we go. So no idea, probably because.
No one should ever use Linux. Let's be very clear.
No one.
Especially Microsoft. But I don't.
It's probably just cheaper to license. I mean, if they had to license their own
it's
stuff.
It's just cheap what, to use your own system.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we got to use Microsoft. We got to talk to our own agency. Our left
hand. Do you have any idea how difficult the licensing is over there?
Could you
there?
Imagine Skype division trying to talk to the Windows division? They're going to be like, no. We're going to have to pay ourselves a lot of money. No, we'll
have
to. They
have a lot to figure out on the Skype side, by the way.
I mean, Skype is still a little. Unawesome.
Well, I mean, Microsoft has these competing products too, right? I mean, it's not just how are we going to integrate Skype into everything. It's, I mean, how are we going to rectify? We have Windows Live Messenger, we have Link, and we have Skype. And why are these three different things? Like, why, you know, can we just have one thing that does all this stuff?
Isn't Live Messenger just Messenger now, or is it chat? I forget what the grid said. Because Live is dead, right?
Yeah. So Windows Live is dead. Windows Live, well, there's a messaging app in Windows 8, which is a full screen app. And then my understanding is that Messenger, the application, I guess, will continue because it has additional functionality as well. But
so I'm still going to be able to nudge people?
Nudge?
Has anyone ever nudged anyone other than by mistake?
On what?
In Windows Live Messenger.
So I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's an awful thing.
It's like a poke.
Yeah, they have...
it's like a shove. Wait.
Actually, I don't even have the thing on.
So there's push mail, there's poking, and there's nudging? Are you trying to tell me?
Why don't I see this?
I don't know.
Well, usually there's a little menu bar, and you can... Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. It's just a little icon. Yeah, send a nudge. It's a little emoticon where he looks like he's getting shaken up. I click it by mistake.
You've been nudging
people
by mistake?
And the person I'm talking to is like, what the hell was that? Like, that was a mistake. It's a feature of Windows Live Messenger. It's a mistake.
Mistakenly nudging.
There's a Wikipedia article. There you go.
Also known as Buzz. It was a feature of instant messaging software used to get the attention of another user. Couldn't you just say hello? All right. I guess it's for the antisocial. You don't know exactly what to say, but you'll nudge him. Anyway, yep. I'm sure that's a feature that people love to use. Like Paul, by accident. So that's probably why it's still there, because people see the data. Like, yeah, people use it. Anyway.
That's in the metrics.
We'd like to thank Audible for sponsoring Windows Weekly. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. Now, Audible.com, you know this, is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals. Now, for listeners of Windows Weekly, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook you might want to consider downloading is something Paul's going to tell you about.
Yeah, I see. I updated the document, but you might not see it. So somebody asked me just this week via email whether I had a place where I had listed all of my Audible picks, or at least my favorite Audible picks. And I thought I actually did that last year, but I guess I didn't. I couldn't find it. And I thought there are three that come to me right off the top of my head that are just particularly excellent that I've picked over the years. One of them fairly recently. One of them this year, actually. But there, for whatever reason, there are certain Audible books that are just over the top excellent, like really, really good. The one that came out recently is the new version of Dracula, which has an all-star cast, of largely British actors. Fantastic. Very, very good. But looking back over the years, I mean, the two that really strike me, other than that, at least off the top of my head, are Solaris, which is I believe it's a Russian or Polish science fiction story that was made fairly recently into a movie as well, but is read by the guy who played, who was on Battlestar Galactica, Lieutenant Gata, I guess was the guy's name, at least in the show, which is just absolutely fantastic. And the other one is actually three separate audiobooks, Nightmares and Dreamscapes, part 1, 2, and 3. Based on the Stephen King book of short and medium length stories. Also, each one of them is read by a different famous person of some kind, you know, actors like Tim Curry and so forth. That one is, that's just fantastic. And that's one I've actually listened to again and again. The one I remember the most from the first time I went through it was there was a woman reading one of the stories. It's the Stephen King story where the frogs actually fall from the sky. It's where the kind of biblical plagues
come to life.
I was
going to say, isn't that the Bible? But no.
No, that's a Stephen King story. So, but I'm listening to this woman's voice and I'm thinking, this person is so familiar. Who the heck is this? And it ends, I finally looked it up and it was the woman who plays Lisa on The Simpsons. And that's why the voice was very familiar because she talks exactly like that. So those are the three I can think of off the top of my head. I know there are at least a couple more. I meant to, as we were going on, when you were doing one of the ads, I meant to go look and see what a few of the others are. But those, if you're just going to get started and you want something that's just going to show you why this thing can be so special. I think any one of those would be a great choice. They're just excellent.
So you can download that audiobook for free, any of those books, or other choices. Let's say you're like, you know, I don't agree with Paul's tastes at all. I want to listen to things like...
How dare you?
Well, yeah, maybe you want to know. Maybe you have too much stuff. Like there's the book by, I think it's Peter Walsh. It's called, It's All Too Much. And it's basically about decluttering. And because I have this kind of a hoarder, I kept a lot of stuff that I never wanted to... I don't ever want to part with my stuff, like my gadgets and my comic books and all kinds of things. There it is. It's All Too Much, an easy plan for living a richer life with less stuff. It's great. I listened to that on a long car ride, and I'm a big fan of that kind of stuff. You can get that kind of stuff for free, though. That's right, one credit for free. To download this audiobook free or any other one of your choice, check out audible.com/windows, okay? Again, audible.com/windows. Now, there are certain books that are two-credit books, very small percentage, you know, like Games of Thrones, two credits, but you can get other books, one-credit books, for free, audible.com/windows. We thank Audible for their sponsorship of Windows Weekly. Shall we get to the picks, Mr. Thorott? Sunshine, as you put it.
Absolutely. I was looking through my list of Audible books. There are more. But actually, you know, I should have mentioned the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the first sequel, Restaurant at the End of the Galaxy. Or Restaurant at the End of the Universe, I guess. Douglas Adams, read by Stephen Fry. Those are laugh out loud, unbelievably funny, too. Those are great.
And so I was just thinking about that concept, just hearing Stephen Fry do that. And like, that would be awesome. Because why not? You can get it for free.
Remember that time at band camp?
No, I don't.
So, all right, picks of the week. My tip of the week is that today... Charles Petzold's latest book is out, available in beta form. It's the first electronic version of what's going to become Programming Windows 6th Edition. This is his Metro Windows 8 programming book. And the cool thing about it is he's writing this over the development of Windows 8. So eventually this book will cost $50, which is typical price for a brand new computer book. But he's allowing people to buy it early, and you can buy it as it's being written. So the version that's out today is the consumer preview version. Sometime probably in early July, he'll release the second edition, which will be the release preview edition. And then by the time that Windows 8 is released, he will ship the final version of the ebook. But if you buy it today and for the next 2 weeks, you can get this book for only $10. And then you get the free updates to the other versions as well. And so this is an incredible deal, and written by an absolute legend in the industry. And just he's a great guy, too, for whatever that's worth. But when it comes to programming for Windows, you know, it's basically Petzold and everyone else. So definitely, if you're interested, even slightly interested in programming for Windows 8, this is the book to get. And it was what I was reading when you called me on Skype.
And that's normally $50, right? That's normally $50.
Yeah, it will be $50, yeah.
It's $10 right now. You get EPUB, MOBI, or PDF, so you can read this on anything.
Yep.
$10. Now I need to go buy this.
Yeah, no, he's the man. He's got a free ebook version of a C-sharp primer of sorts. Kind of, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a way to just to learn the language C-sharp. And then he also did a Windows Phone programming book, you know. He's kind of evolved. He started off in what became the Win32 style of programming, obviously. He did some WPF type stuff, I believe, WinForms and so on. So he's kind of moved forward with all of the different technologies that Microsoft has used for writing Windows programs. And now his latest one is it's C-sharp XAML, you know, WinRT type development for Windows 8. So I've just started it, but it's, you know, Petzold, he's the man. So definitely check that one out.
Now, your software pick is something we kind of talked about.
I guess we did kind of talk about this. I had put that one in earlier. Yeah, it's just the Bing with social networking suggestions. Since that one is so lame, and since I already mentioned it, let me mention another one that I had in here briefly. Microsoft came out with a tool called the USB. It was called the. Let's look it up. It's the window. It's the.
What did the tool do?
The Windows 7 USB DVD download tool.
Okay.
And what it does is. It's a tiny tool. You can get it from Microsoft Store. CNET has the download as well, but you can just search and find the download. It's a small little Metro-looking tool. It lets you take an ISO file of a Windows setup disk of some kind. It can be Windows 7. It can be Windows 8. It can be any version of those. It can be Windows Server, any version. And you can burn it to a DVD, although that capability is just built into Windows. But the cool thing that this thing does is it lets you copy the installation files to a bootable USB device. And so obviously the USB device has to be big enough to, you know, to fit the files. So in a 64-bit version of Windows, you probably need an 8-gig, not a 4-gig stick. But once you have this thing, what you can do with it is, if you have an Ultrabook or a netbook or a tablet or any other computer that doesn't have a DVD drive and you don't want to get a DVD drive just for this one purpose, you can copy the setup files onto this onto the stick using this tool. It's free. Microsoft provides it. It works great. I've been using it with all of the different Windows 8 versions I've gotten. I find it to be much quicker to install Windows using a USB key, and then it's handy just to have it around. And it's something you don't have to worry about, like a disk where you're going to scratch it or whatever. So also a cool tool.
Magically, in my hand, showed up these USB disks or drives.
With the various...
Windows 8 DP, which stands for Developer Preview. Not yep. What you think. CP, Consumer Preview. Customer Preview, I forget what they call it.
Consumer Preview.
I'm just mixing it up. And then we have Windows 8 Server Beta. This is exciting. I have Windows. Lots of Windows.
And I bet every one of those was created with this very tool.
Is that true, Alex?
It's true.
It's true. So it works.
Yep, works great. I use this thing all the time. I used it as recently as today.
I remember the old days where I would actually have to put things on zip disk. I would take my 1.44 megabyte disks and put them all on my zip disk. You can do that now. I feel like an old
I wish the PC makers would give those things away. You should get one of those in the box with a new computer.
A USB drive?
Especially a USB disk with the install files on it.
But it would have great... I'm sure they could do that and it could be subsidized too. It'll come with some auto-run software, which would be great. That's what I'm afraid of. Here's your free USB disk, and it's great.
And some crapware.
Yes, you can't get anything without crapware. I'm sorry. But if you pay an extra fee, you can get no crapware on it. I can do that. It's called formatting.
$99.
Well, the feature's already out of the system.
It's the deal of a lifetime.
That's one way to go. Okay, I think we've wrapped up this episode of Windows Weekly. Unless Paul Thrott has to say anything, I'm going to just poke at him.
Wrong eye.
There we go. the internet. Nope. Don't you love using technology to waste people's time like that? What I just did there. Then this is costing millions of dollars to show you and produce.
This is the Skype version of that thing the cop makes you do when he thinks you're drunk. You know, you have to walk on the line and then
we'll just walk you around. Well, you got wheels. I'm pretty sure you can go in a straight line no matter what. Just look still.
Just right down the hall.
Okay, we've gone off into a tangent, which probably means we should take the show and kind of wrap it up like in a ball and then give it to somebody in a podcast format. But anyway, Paul, where can people find you on the internet? Where?
I wish there was a way. Well,
if you had to imagine one, if you had to register some URLs in the past, how would you possibly do it?
Right. WinSuperSite.com is my main website, pretty much my only website, I guess. And you can find me on Twitter at @Thurott, my last name, Thurrott. And I actually just found myself looking at my name on screen as if I needed to read it to know how to spell it.
Well, you got to make sure. I mean, you did pass that sobriety test.
Is it 2 R's? I always forget.
2 R's, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'm sure when you sign your name, who knows what it looks like. But you need to have it with the T-H-U-R-R-O-T-T. That's right. That's Paul. Anyway, so next week, Leo should be back. Mary Jo should be back. Actually, they'll be in the office over
actually,
there.
Actually, Mary Jo won't be back till the following week.
Then never mind what I just said. Leo will be back. Paul, will you be back?
I will be back, yes.
I'll be on the other side of the glass watching and listening like I usually do and hearing when I'm being chided like the last time, saying I don't give accolades.
I don't know where that comes from. This random abuse, you know, to the guy who's not hosting the show that day.
Oh,
it's
not random. It's planned.
It's uncalled for.
I believe it's totally called for. It's a feature. It's kind of under there. I have to present it better. Anyway, thanks for watching Windows Weekly. We'll see, or you'll see some of us next week.